Okay, well, I welcome you all to the presentation entitled Mapping Community Participation Among Adults with Psychiatric Disabilities, Implications of Geographic Methods for Studying Physical Health. It is my pleasure to introduce our presenter, Mark Salzer. Dr. Salzer is professor and chair of the Department of Rehabilitation Sciences at Temple University, and also director of the Temple University Collaborative on Community Inclusion of Individuals with Psychiatric Disabilities. His research focuses on evidence-based community mental health services, psychiatric rehabilitation models, mental health, self-directed care, supported education, and enhancing community participation of people in recovery. Please join me in welcoming him.
Even though I think I have to use this microphone because we are recording, so I feel like I'm yelling at good friends here with the microphone, but we'll just all have to deal with that. I was trying. Yeah, whatever you want to do is fine with me. So I was thrilled when this meeting started out yesterday with Judith presenting a couple of maps. And it made me very excited because it fits in line with the kind of work that we're doing at our center. We also have an RRTC, a NIDER-funded center on community living and participation of adults with psychiatric disabilities. So I also have to thank NIDER and also thank Dr. Cook for her collaboration and really mentoring and work with our center over the years. So I was excited to see that as a start. My interest in environment and geography is really based on two things. The first is the fundamental attribution error. I don't know how many of you are familiar with this, but it's something that I think is rampant in our mental health system. The fundamental attribution error is a bias where we assume that things that happen to other people that we meet is due to internal characteristics. So we kind of ignore context, geography, where people live, all those other factors. We think it's something internal to them, which leads to their experiences in the world. Whereas for us, we take context into consideration. So it's not that I wasn't trying, it's this person did that, or I live in this particular community, or it takes me this amount of time. So my concern about the fundamental attribution error is basic things like community participation, living, and health. We assume that it has something to do with, for people with serious mental illnesses, something to do with characteristics. It's diagnostic characteristics. It could be symptoms. It could be personalities. It could be lots of different things. And we're completely missing the context. So I'll be talking about context today and geography. And I've come to conclude that I think at least half of the experience that people with serious mental illnesses have in their lives and in the world in a lot of different areas has to do with these external, these environmental factors. It could be stigma and discrimination. We've talked about transportation a little bit here. Poverty is a huge area, and the types of neighborhoods that people live in and what type of access people have to resources, I think, are fundamentally important. And one of my concerns is we're quick to go to internal characteristics. My least favorite internal characteristic that we point to all the time these days, and we talked about it this morning, is cognitive deficits. I hear cognitive deficits all the time. Everybody needs cognitive remediation. We were just talking about, you know, we need a special website for people with serious mental illnesses because they have cognitive deficits. I think that that's a complete mistake, and we're headed down a very bad direction, and we're missing other factors. But that's just my bias. The second thing that, second reason I'm interested in this area is I am a big devotee, a big fan of the International Classification of Health, Functioning, and Disease, a framework put together by the World Health Organization in 2002. We don't talk about it too much here in the United States, but it is talked about a lot more in the European Union and the rest of the world. It takes a social model of disability perspective So that really means that the experiences, the health and functioning and disability experiences of people is not viewed as something internal within the individual. It actually views the individual in context in their environment. And part of the model actually talks about environmental factors as having an impact on body function and structure. Are people familiar with the ICF model? I mean, I assume that a lot of you are. So these are this is health right here. And health isn't just body function and structure, things within the brain, symptoms, those kinds of things. It's not just activities, ADLs, those kinds of things. But it also includes participation, community living and participation, and the environment has an impact on that. So that's also why we're very interested in geography as well. So our center over the last 10 plus years or so has been doing a lot of work utilizing geographic methods like geographic information systems, global positioning systems, and other methodologies, and really applying it to understanding community living and participation and also how that plays a role in health as well. I do have to acknowledge one of my colleagues, a guy named Eugene Brusilovsky, who's our statistician. He also has a master's degree in urban spatial analytics. Believe it or not, there's such a degree, and it's pretty fascinating the kinds of things he can do. The kinds of questions that we've been interested in are looking at, and why this is important, is that we all know, or we think we know, that environmental factors are related to health outcomes in some kind of way, and we're trying to discover what those links are. What are these relationships? What are those factors? So instead of intervening on the individual, we might be able to intervene at the community or neighborhood or, at that kind of level. We also know that mobility and community participation are indicators of health status. People who are having significant health problems are probably less mobile and participating less in the community, so that's another reason we're exploring this. And we also can look at mobility as an outcome of health intervention. So we're just talking about a diabetes registry. There was one finding that I think Crystal Glover was talking about where there was a 1% or a 1-point decrease in A1C, 25% increase in longevity or something like that. And I would want to see if that's related to increased mobility and community participation and looking at some different methods to assess that. So these are some reasons why to use these geographic methods. So geographic information systems, are people utilizing these? I know Amy mentioned them. So this is, it's basically mapping. We can map where people are living, where people with psychiatric disabilities are living in the community. What are the community characteristics? So we can gather community level data from various sources that are somewhat readily available and becoming more available in various communities. And then looking at people with serious mental illnesses, their exposure to these factors and how that might be related to different outcomes like health outcomes, recovery, symptoms, cognitive issues, those kinds of things. And the two specific types of questions that we can ask with GIS are distance to particular resources that might be available. So how far person A lives on Wabash Avenue, you know, right over here, how far away in miles or feet is he or she from a community mental health center? How far away from a pharmacy, a hospital, to a vocational employment center? How far away does that person live? And we might hypothesize that the farther away an individual lives from these community resources, the more challenging it might be to access those resources. And density gets at how many of these types of resources are within a certain space or a certain region of the individual. So how many grocery stores are within a 2-mile radius of where individuals live? So those are the kinds of things that we can look at with GIS. Our center started this work by asking a question about something that was called psychiatric ghettoization. There was a lot written about deinstitutionalization, and a lot of people are concerned about what happens when people are coming out of state and county hospitals back into the community. Where are they living? There were anecdotes about people living in large congregate housing settings, people living in neighborhoods where there were a lot of other individuals who might have been released or discharged from a state hospital, but there weren't any studies of this phenomenon. So we were actually the first ones to try to look at this phenomenon of psychiatric ghettoization, and is it really true? Is this happening? Are people with serious mental illnesses living in more concentrated parts of the city than other individuals? So what we did is we had access to addresses for about 15,000 people who have a serious mental illness in Philadelphia County. And we also received access to addresses. So they're receiving Medicaid reimbursed services, so 15,000 people, serious mental illness, schizophrenia, spectrum disorders, bipolar disorder, and major depression. And they must have received Medicaid reimbursed services within the previous year. And we also obtained addresses for other individuals who received Medicaid reimbursed services, but not because, but there was no indication that they had a mental illness based on receiving mental health services or a diagnosis. And we created a map of their density. Where are people living? So on the left-hand side is a map. This is Philadelphia County, of where people with psychiatric disabilities are living in Philadelphia County. The darker areas are the heavier concentrations of individuals. On the right-hand side is a map of individuals who also receive Medicaid reimbursed services. So we're controlling for poverty, right? But they don't have a psychiatric disability. What we found in this study is an indication of modest residential segregation, that this group over here, the individuals with a psychiatric or mental disability, were slightly more concentrated than the other individuals who receive Medicaid reimbursed services. So some indication that this psychiatric ghettoization is happening or has happened, at least in the Philadelphia area. But the fact of the matter is, where people are living, what was most striking from this is that people are living in certain communities that we know have certain characteristics. And I'll be talking about that in a second. One thing to... Yeah, sure. Yep. Questions?